Good morning. What a delight it is to open up our scriptures today. And I have to confess, I'm a little scared. The prophet Jeremiah, the poet who enters into the scene to declare something that is actually a little bit scary. To speak against the dominant culture. Karen, you read so beautifully. Such a gentle word that foreshadows something that is very, very real for us. But the context today, on this, the 11th of September, is a little more gentle, one might say. It's football season, finals. And if you're wondering what the context is of the football finals, it's this. Last night, there was a handshake, but it wasn't just any handshake. This is the beginning of the game between two rugby league teams who I can't remember. It had a name. The commentary named this, and two captains coming forward for insert telco handshake. This gesture between captains has been branded by I can't even name it to defile you this morning. Insert brand telco for this handshake. That, I'm proposing, is our context today. Everything is up for sale. The good news, if you hadn't heard, is that God seeks and finds the lost. That is such resounding good news. God seeks and finds the lost. Who among us today would count yourself as the one among the 100 or the one among... Who here is here because you think you've got it? We're all here, aren't we? Because we know ourselves a little bit too well, that we are those who are counted among the lost. The good news is that everyone can be lost. That actually is the good news. Every single human being has the capacity to be lost, to be forsaken, to be sick, to be weak, to be dead. And that is where the power of Jesus Christ, the immortal, invisible God, works. It does get a little disconcerting, however, when Jesus, here in the season of Luke, constantly uses those who are holding up the image of what it is to be faithful happen to be the lost. So earlier in Luke, it's the Samaritan, the outcast, who embodies what it is to live the love, the law of love. In these chapters here, we also then get the prodigal is the one who actually finds the banquet. It's the poor beggar. It's the widow. It's the leprous Samaritan. These are all images Jesus uses of the ones who are lost as those who are exemplars of being faithful. So the good news is God's love and grace and welcome is for all, every. But a little bit of humility is required, lest we become overwhelmed with our own sense of entitlement. A little example. A lot of what I say today, it comes through the lens of Walter Brueggemann, an extraordinary Old Testament scholar. We need to be a little bit humble with the names that we use for God. We need a little bit of gentleness with the names. Here's why. In the semi-final of a certain rugby game between a Radford College rugby team and Vikings, a boy was given a red card and sent off. The referee marked the name as that one sent off as Matthew Browning. You don't even know this, Matt. The referee had on the name for the red card Matthew Browning. It wasn't Matthew Browning. It was Ryan. Now, the fact that the referee's got the name wrong means that the sentence can't actually be served. But if he had the name right, whosoever is the correct name must serve a penalty, which it is, you're not able to play your first and second game season 2017. The use of a name allows us to exercise some propriety over the name that we know. When we come to God, we need to be a little bit more humble with the names that we have for God, because they can become like handles that the immortal and invisible one can become for us somebody who he can exercise power over. So Brueggemann won't translate the sacred name for God, which in our text is the Lord. So the letters, YHWH, he won't translate. Commonly translated as I am in the English, the Lord, or I was, or I will be, or I am what I will be, or I am who I will be. Whenever that name is used, anyone who uses it has fundamentally no handles for God's sacred name. There is an inbuilt humility when we use God's name. And I offer that as a beginning point for our readings today. We can't use God as if we can own God. So even the names that we use, we need to go gently, humbly, lest we create our own idol and miss the real God. So the sacred name for God, translated as the Lord, written as YHWH, best translated today might be, but I can't project that. That's the sound of your breath, by the way. So, I will be who I will be is the one who emancipates and sets free. So the great story in the context for Jeremiah, the prophetic poet, is the slavery of Egypt and the movement through Exodus into freedom. So this God, whose name is full of extraordinary intrigue around being, sets people free. There's a movement then from Egypt through the waters into freedom. So there is a rupturing then of the dominant narrative, the narrative of the empire. The narrative of the empire promises security, certainty, perfection, and privatization. So that's pictured, if you like, by the pyramid, basically. There's one male sitting at the top. I am who will be what I will be. Sets the people free from this dominant narrative, the narrative of the empire, and transports people into a free, free land. And here in that free land comes the best ways to live. You know them as the Ten Commandments. These are the rules for us when we can go anyway. Here's the way that we should go. But maybe we forget that caught up in these Ten Commandments is an extraordinary, incredible binding. It's covenant, and it's covenant to something exquisite. Can I remind you of some of the other pieces that come with it? We're now reading from Deuteronomy. From Deuteronomy comes this extraordinary thing that the debts of the poor be owned. Why? Because I've brought you out of, remember you were slaves and I've brought you out of Egypt. That there will be no interest charged on loans to members of the community. That there is permanent hospitality to be given to those who've run away from slavery. That no collateral is required by the poor to attract a loan. That no one should ever withhold wages to the poor. That no injustice should ever be given to the alien or the orphan. Remember, you were slaves, and I, the one who has brought you out of Egypt. Remember, remember, remember. And maybe the most remarkable of them all, that every 7 years there will be no intergenerational poverty. Everything is re-established. People of faith, the God of covenant is an extraordinary engagement of a new economy to the neighbor underneath the covenant to God. This is an extraordinary promise. And just because the people of God have left the land of Egypt to come into this new embrace, this is where the prophet Jeremiah comes, to a new caution that we can bring Egypt with us, that we can actually make this dominant culture ours in the land that's promised to us. And so we need to be a little careful, because under David and Solomon comes a new reign where the empire of scarcity, certainty, perfection and privatization occurs even in the temple and the house of the king himself. And this is really unsettling. If you think this is unsettling, why is it that God seems to be so comfortable with Exodus? Barely a generation have they come to this land, and that the temple itself has been built, then what Jeremiah warns takes place. Can you imagine the disruption where the walls of Jerusalem itself are knocked down, the temple is destroyed, and the people are carted away? The people of God have lived with this disruption. So the narrative of the empire, originally from Egypt, actually takes its place in roots within the walls of the holy city itself. And this is what Jeremiah is warning against. This is what Jeremiah warns against. If one of the most exquisite passages from Jeremiah is in 29:7, where the people are in exile, and Jeremiah says to them, seek the peace of your Babylon. Listen to this. Seek the peace of the city in which you find yourselves, because in its welfare is your welfare. In its peace is your peace. Brueggemann talks about then the God who is difficult to name, the immortal, the invisible one, calls us to covenant. And covenant binds us not to a dominant culture that holds up that everything is for sale, everything is to be privatized, that holds up everything, everything is scarce, so hoard it, hold on to it, that we can actually be secure with certainty. The people of God lived in exile, a new, extraordinary story that God is in wilderness, is in exile. God is among the lost, and we are they. If you're wondering the characteristics of this God, it is the God of steadfast love, justice, and righteousness. We may have difficulty naming God, but we'd have no difficulty naming the character of God. God of steadfast love, justice and righteousness, whose characters are faithfulness in covenant, with the equalizing for the weak, the poor, the alien, the orphan, the widow. And an extraordinary, an incredible intervention for the well-being of all. That's the character of God. So rather than the dominant narrative of empire, we hear this extraordinary narrative of the God who disrupts. And it's this, the God of covenant, where there is abundance, mystery, fallibility, common good. These are the marks of the place where God is calling us into. On this, the 11th of September, we are aware, aren't we, that there are real acts and marks of terror. But what they also mark is that the dominant narrative of empire is not true. The dominant marks of empire is not true. That we can't, with bombs or walls, make us secure. You cannot apply the power, the wisdom of empire to gain security. You can't. And the sooner we wake up to this biblical truth, the more peace there will be among us. You who are drawn here this Sunday, the God that you and I are drawn to, this extraordinary God whose name is elusive and yet so extraordinarily real and powerful, calls us to a new narrative. And it is that under God there is abundance. There is enough for all. Under God, there is more mystery than there is the security of knowing and certainty. So the terror is actually breaks in to shake the narrative of empire. And if we're paying attention, we can hear the call of God to a faithfulness of the covenant, to a faithfulness of the covenant. And that's not a covenant built with walls or bombs or security in armies and badges and soldiers and things. It's faithfulness to God. It's such an alarmingly terrifying gospel that it's for everyone. It is for everyone. And God is real in our midst, disrupting the narrative. Don't be afraid of being lost, of being found in the wilderness. For here God calls us to the covenant, to be faithful. The prophet Jeremiah, fulfilled in the person of Jesus Christ, invites a reimagining. We are found in God through Jesus Christ. We are called literally to an economy that is bound to the well-being of the neighbor. Its test is ancient. the orphan, the widow, the alien. The wisdom of God is foolish. Its power is for the weak. And here we are. We find ourselves drawn to this table, to a new story. Rise, people of God. God is among us, is powerful and real, whose name we know, but go gently. For God calls us into a new place where we build an economy with neighbor now. Here God is faithful and will be found. The steadfast love, the justice and righteousness of God is profoundly real. Dare you and I hear it and be drawn into it. This is our call today. Come and taste, come and eat, come and be drawn into this love, this justice, this holy place. God has called you by name, that you and I would be the ambassadors of this extraordinary reality in our own neighborhood. It begins here, in our very midst. God, you who are immortal and invisible, help us hear your call. Find us in our wilderness, in our lostness. Make us your people. Build up the neighborhood here under your covenant. You are trustworthy. You are real. You are among us. Find us today. Amen.